I'm JP Tuesday.
And I'm Kiki Cannon. As lifelong Disney fans, the work of countless talented Disney creatives have shaped our lives.
Now, as the Disney catalog expands, we're taking a journey through film and television to discover if that spark that shaped us as children lives on in adulthood.
Does your favorite Disney media still cast that same spell? Join us as we find out. We are
Rewatching the Magic. Hi, Kiki.
Hi, Tuesday.
Before we recorded, we noticed something, because a few weeks back, we did Cartoon All-Star to the Rescue, and the characters are introduced by merchandise of these cartoon characters coming to life. Last week, we did Night at the Museum, which is about museum exhibits that come to life. And now we're doing Toy Story 3, which is the franchise where toys come to life. Unintentional theme month.
Yeah.
So yeah, Toy Story 3, the Toy Story franchise. As we are recording it, they did just announce Toy Story 5 coming next year. Do we need a Toy Story 5? No, I don't think we need a Toy Story 5, but it's going to happen. Did we need a Toy Story 4? No. Did we even need a Toy Story 3?
I don't know. Having seen this, because this was a first watch for me, having now seen this, I think this was kind of a perfect wrap up, and we'll talk about that more when we talk about it.
All right.
So I'm okay with this existing.
All right. So the version of Toy Story 3 that exists, the version that was released in 2010, the version that is on Disney Plus, not the original version of the movie. And I've mentioned this before, about a little studio known as Circle 7. Pixar made their first movie, Toy Story, in 95, signed a deal with Disney to distribute it. Toy Story becomes a hit. Disney and Pixar enter an agreement to do 5 more films. And those 5 films became Bugs Life, Monsters, Inc., Finding Nemo, The Incredibles, and Cars. Notice that I did not mention Toy Story 2. Toy Story 2 originally was going to be a direct-to-video movie. It got moved to a theatrical feature. Disney decided to pull rank and say, oh, your contract says 5 original films. Sequels don't count. Besides, Toy Story 2 was supposed to be a direct-to-video movie. If you want the whole story, check out our Toy Story 2 episode. We really go into it there. So during the production of Cars, Disney and Pixar decide to come together and try to figure out a new contract. Are they going to extend the old contract? Are they going to make a new contract? Neither side really knows for sure. Pixar is already angry at Disney due to how they're treated by the Disney company. Unattainable deadlines and whatnot. Again, go back to our Toy Story 2 episode to when we really go into it. Eventually, as Cars is about to be released, Disney and Pixar both walk away from the table, and Pixar is ready to become an independent studio. They are going to work with other studios and just do their own thing. Michael Eisner. Yeah, got to mention him. Michael Eisner, who was the head of Disney at that time, says, good, we don't need Pixar because due to the contract, we own these movies. So every Pixar movie from Toy Story 1 all the way to Cars is now owned by Disney because of the way that contract was. So we own these movies. We own these characters. We can do whatever we want with them. And Michael Eisner creates Circle 7 Studios for the sole purpose of creating sequels based on those Pixar movies. And right off the bat, puts 3 sequels into production. I've talked a little bit about them when we talked about their respective films. That would be Finding Marlin, a sequel to Finding Nemo. Monsters, Inc. 2, Lost in Scaradise, obviously a sequel to Monsters, Inc. And Toy Story 3. Eventually, Michael Eisner is outed as the CEO of Disney. In comes Bob Iger. Iger closes down Circle 7 Studios and just straight up buys Pixar from Steve Jobs. The first of many acquisitions that we still talk about today. The other acquisitions, of course, being Marvel and Lucasfilm, and you know the rest.
Yeah.
So Circle 7 Studios no longer exists. Unfortunately, while some of those animators are able to be absorbed into Walt Disney Animation and Pixar, respectively, a lot of them are let go, unfortunately, because Disney is an evil corporate empire. Yes, I'm saying that on a Disney podcast.
We do not stand a corporation.
Yes. So Circle 7 Studios, the people that work at Circle 7 Studios still has all of the stuff that they made for those three sequels that never got made. Now, if you want full details on these three movies, there are countless videos online detailing every beat of the scripts. Because the scripts are out there. The people that worked at Circle 7, they straight up released the scripts. They had them. They're online. You can see, you can read them. There are videos that try to, that do synopsis, full script synopsis of these three films. And the first film that was going to be released was this Toy Story 3, this original incarnation. I first remember, because Toy Story 3 was the one that I remember the most because there was actual advertisements for this. The advertisement, and it's out there, and you can see it online, is a wall of Buzz Lightyear toys, straight out of Toy Story 2. That scene from Toy Story 2 with all the Buzz Lightyears, with the word recalled right over them. That was going to be what this movie was about. I'm going to give a short synopsis of the movie, not going to go too into it, just so you, dear listener, who may not be familiar with the story, can kind of get what the story was going to be. Buzz Lightyear starts to malfunction. Andy's mom, in an attempt to save Buzz, sends him back to the manufacturer that made the toy in Taiwan. At this point, Andy's family goes on vacation. That's all they're written out of the movie. As all of this has happened, Woody and the other toys find out that there is a national recall, a worldwide recall of every Buzz Lightyear toy to be shipped back to Taiwan. And these toys apparently know what a recall is, and they know it's bad news because they know that they'll never see Buzz again. Woody and the toys mail themselves to Taiwan, and it's a race to get Buzz back because they do not want Buzz to be recalled. They do not want Buzz to be destroyed. And both Buzz and Woody and the other toys meet a new cast of recalled toys, and there's an adventure there, and that's about all you need to know. So Kiki, knowing this, based on what I've just said, would that be a movie that you would want to see?
I'm not sure it would be a movie that would actually get made because of the inclusion of Taiwan. I'm just gonna, whether or not it would be a movie I would watch is a completely different matter. International geopolitics would probably have meant that they would have had to change some of that. But, you know, I don't know. I mean, it's fine enough as a plot, considering most of the other plots of these. Mm-hmm.
So, obviously, like I said, Circle 7 shuts down. It never happens. Pixar is bought by Disney. And yes, they make their own Toy Story 3 because they already knew Disney was going to make their own Toy Story 3. Obviously, they throw all of that out because Pixar wants to make their own movie. You know, why would they take an idea that wasn't theirs in the first place? Makes sense. So now we have this Toy Story 3. The real Toy Story 3, the one that got made. And it's very interesting because in the original Toy Story 3, the Circle 7 Toy Story 3, Andy is very much still a child. But now in the official Toy Story 3, Andy's an adult. Andy grew up. He's off to college now. This sequel takes place in real time from when the original movie was released back in the 90s. And that is honestly kind of a ballsy move. And very un-Disney. The only character that has ever had that kind of growth has been Max from Goof Troop. Because Max was a middle schooler in the cartoon. He's a high schooler in the first movie. By the time we get to the second movie, he's in college. House of Mouse, he's already an adult with a job. So having to have any of these characters age at all is a very novel idea from any Disney company.
The interesting thing is that while it came out in 2010... if you kind of follow the timeline, Toy Story 3 would have to take place in 2007.
Because Andy is 6 years old in Toy Story 1, and that does take place in 1995.
Yeah. He would have been born in 1989. Andy is a millennial. And he's supposed to be like 17, about to turn 18, going off to college. So if this took place in 2010, he would be 21. So that's not how old he is in the movie. So this would have to be 2007.
I mean, he has a flip phone, which kind of works.
Yeah. And they still have a landline in the house, which I think most of us had gotten rid of by 2010.
Very early laptops that Andy uses.
Yeah. So the thing about it is, though, is that it is kind of interesting that they're a little behind.
I think it's this movie was 100% recent when they started animating it and writing it.
Yeah, and I think also the difference between the original idea was that they started planning it much earlier. Which is why Andy is still a kid. And by the time Disney bought Pixar and they took over the plan, everybody was like, well, Andy would be like going off to college now. Let's do that idea.
They would not revisit this because when they did Finding Dory and Incredibles 2, they kept those characters the same age.
Well, the thing is that Toy Story has a different moral, if you want to call it that. So the other ones are more about like family or learning something about yourself or whatever. And Toy Story is more about like growing up and letting go and moving on and, you know? So having the character age is kind of intrinsic to the moral of the story. Which is why I think you have to have Andy age in this, but the other ones kind of stay where they are.
Although the idea of an Incredibles movie where the kids are older and their own respective heroes would have been really cool. I don't think we'll ever get Incredibles 3, but I kind of want that.
Yeah, seeing kind of the grown-up ones and, like, seeing a slightly older Jack-Jack would be cool.
Mm.
To see, like, if he still has all of the powers or if he's just settled into one.
Mm.
You want to get into some of the cast here?
Yeah, and, I mean, it is Toy Story. I mean, all of the major characters come back. We have Tom Hanks, we have Tim Allen, Joan Cusack's back. Amazingly, John Morris is back. John Morris played Andy in the first two Toy Story movies as a child. They did not recast Andy. They had the actual adult actor come back and be Andy.
Although they did recast the kid Andy, because there is the flashback, and they got a new child actor to do the child parts. Mm-hmm. And then had John Morris do the older Andy.
Mm-hmm.
We do have a couple of unfortunate recastings because, you know, some of the people had passed on.
Jim Varney had passed away by this point. Blake Clark is the new voice of Slinky Dog. Amazing impression.
Yeah, I mean, you really can't even tell. And sadly, this would be Arlie Ermey's last performance as Sarge.
Yeah.
Because he would pass away just after they recorded this.
And the last performance of Don Rickles as Mr. Potato Head.
Yeah, sadly, that would be the case as well. We have some new people, of course.
Ned Beatty as our villain, Lotso Huggenbear.
Yeah, spoiler alert. we've got James Bond here, Timothy Dalton, mm-hmm. as Mr. Prickle Pants. who I love this character so much. The Shakespearean porcupine.
I mean, it's a trope. I mean, most people our age would identify that kind of trope with The Simpsons, with Kelsey Grammer as Sideshow Bob.
Yeah, but Dalton just does it so well.
Because he's Timothy Dalton.
Yeah. And you've got Kristen Schaal in here as Trixie the Triceratops.
Mm-hmm.
And she's always a treat. And Bonnie Hunt comes in as Dolly. And mm-hmm. we get Whoopi Goldberg as the octopus that works for Lotso.
Mm-hmm.
And in one of the best parts ever, Michael Keaton as Ken. He is absolutely Ken-uff.
He is Ken-uff. Anywhere else, he'd be a 10. Gotta get that reference in. Because this is really the first Ken and Barbie movie.
Yeah, and honestly, love it. Love it. Love everything about it.
It is very similar to the Barbie movie in the way they portray Ken and Barbie.
Yeah, and one of my favorite lines in this is when... who is it? Is it Mr. Potato Head that tells Ken he's just an accessory? He's a walking purse?
Yes.
Oh my goodness, that's such a great...
Coming back from the Barbie movie.
Yeah, seeing this after seeing the Barbie movie, that line hits so hard. But Michael Keaton does so amazingly, and he and Jodie Benson, who plays Barbie, play off each other so well, and I don't know if they were ever, like, near each other in a recording booth, it feels like they were in the same room the entire time.
If there's footage of those two recording those lives together, I want to see it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if they were ever in the same room, but this whole thing feels like they were right next to each other, playing off of each other. It is amazing, and I love it.
Movie Ken just wants to ride horses. Toy Story Ken, he just wants to wear his outfits.
No one here likes clothes.
I mean, they're mostly toys. Most of them are naked.
Yeah.
And vintage clothes.
Oh, that Nehru jacket.
Like
Barbie,
Barbie,
how could you?
Barbie even said, like, these are original accessories from the 1960s.
Yeah. Wait, I mean, going back to some of the new people, Richard Kind in here is the bookworm.
Yep.
And I had the toy that was based off of. I guess they couldn't get the rights to the glowworm. But I had one of those glowworms as a kid. So, I mean, it's just a great cast, as always, both in the returning and the new people. Got to admit, I love that they brought back Eric Von Detten for Sid, even though he, like, just basically has a cameo.
Yeah, and it's not even like he goes, pa 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 pa. Sid cleaned his act up. Yes, he's a garbage man now. But he cleaned him up. You know, he flies right now. He plays nice.
And also, he's got one of the most respectable jobs ever. I mean, shout out to sanitation workers. They keep the world running.
And if he wasn't wearing the skull shirt, you would not know that was Sid.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, if I hadn't known that that was him, like, if I hadn't known that he showed up in this movie, in that part, I wouldn't have recognized it.
And it actually ends up playing a very integral part of the movie.
Yeah.
In the third act. I want to talk about, before we really get into it, I want to talk about this opening scene because it is what every kid sees in their imagination when they're playing with their toys.
This is such a great opening scene. And at first, I didn't realize that this was from Andy's perspective. I thought these were the toys just, like, keeping themselves occupied while Andy was away.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, how cute that the toys, like, they're so used to playing with a kid that this is just what they do in their off time. And then it cuts, and it was like, oh, this is what Andy is doing. Cute.
And to see all these different toys from all these different manufacturers and all these different styles just come together, it is a clash, but when you come to the point that this is a child's imagination, and they're putting all of their favorite characters together in one playtime, which every kid did. I did. I had Ninja Turtles fighting alongside He-Man.
Oh, yeah. I mean, who doesn't?
Yeah.
My favorite thing when he goes, oh, no, the orphans. And it's just all the troll dolls.
Just, it's hilarious. And, I mean, it's almost line for line how Andy would play with the toys in the first two films. Like, you know, I have a guard dog with a built-in force field. I have a dinosaur that eats dogs and... You know, evil Dr. Porkchop, one-eyed Bart, one-eyed Betty.
Yeah,
you know,
and I love how it keeps, like, one-upping in the most absurd ways.
Yeah.
You know, it starts out kind of normal because it's just a Wild West train robbery. And then all of a sudden it's like, and now there's a Corvette, and you're like, okay. And then it's like, and now Buzz saves the train with his rocket ship. And then it's like, and now there's a force field, and now there's a rocket ship. And now monkeys.
Barrel of monkeys.
Yeah, the barrel of monkeys made me laugh so hard. Because, man, those things do get everywhere. That avalanche was so true to life if you ever had Barrel of Monkeys.
They would actually base the Toy Story 3 video game on this with the playroom style of playing it like this. And it ended up becoming one of the more popular games at the time because, you know, it's like you got to play the Toy Story characters as Andy would play them, and it was awesome. But the good times do not last as we get this montage of Andy growing up and playing with the toys, and flash forward, and Andy is now 17 years old, going to college, and all of the toys are in a toy box, and they haven't been played with in a while. And most of the guys are gone. Most of the gang is gone. RC is gone. Bo is gone. What happened to Bo? We'll check in that on the next movie.
Yeah, that was the one thing that kind of confused me. I was like, what happened to Bo?
Yeah, the fact that people were demanding what happened to Bo led to the decision to put Bo in Toy Story 4.
Because I'm like, Woody just forgot about his girlfriend? What the hell?
I mean, they make it. There's been a lot of yard sales and a lot of toys got repurposed, right? A lot of the toys got new homes, including Bo. So it's like these are the last ones. It's Woody, Buzz, Slinky, Rex, Mr. and Mrs. Potato Head, Ham, and the aliens. Like, that's all that's left. Or Jesse and Bullseye as well. I'm sorry. Like everyone else, the big army of toys that we've seen in the last two movies, they're all gone. And a lot of them get name dropped. Wheezy's gone. Bo's gone. All of them are gone. Etch-a-Sketch is gone. And you see the sad, the acting from Tom Hanks, it the sadness in his voice when he talks about all of their lost friends, and the way they animate Woody's face and that depression that, you know, like they're all gone. We're all that's left. And it's that realization. Andy's growing up. He doesn't really need us anymore. And as this happened, we get the Green Army men saying, "You know what? The mission is over. Andy's an adult now. He's going on to college. He doesn't need us anymore." And the first toys to get thrown out are the army men. There's only three army men left, and it's Sarge. It's the Army Sarge and two other guys. So, would Andy even miss them? Would he even notice that they were gone if there's only three army men left?
Yeah, the thing at the beginning is kind of really sad when they steal Andy's cell phone and call it to just to try to get him to like pick them up.
Yeah.
And then Rex is like, he picked me up. He picked me up for a minute. He held me.
Who knows how long it's been since they've been played with? But they know the mission, and they even say it. You know, we knew the job when we got into it. It's not about being played with, it's about being there for Andy. This is something that got foreshadowed in Toy Story 2. When the prospector told him, you know, one day Andy's going to grow up, he's going to get rid of you. You think he's going to take you to college, Woody? Ha! Ha, prospector, wouldn't you like to know?
You know, once again, this is Kiki thinks too much about cartoons, but maybe the creators should have thought a little bit more about cartoons. Because, well, one, you can tell that this was a movie about a millennial that was written by not millennials. As I told you before we started recording, the problem with this movie is that Andy is a millennial, and millennials are we do not get rid of our toys. The entire premise of this movie is flawed.
I mean, most millennials don't get rid of their toys because of these movies.
Well, I mean, Possibly that has something to do with it. That now we're all traumatized that we think our toys are like going to be very sad if we get rid of them. But I mean, you were talking about like how like, well, you know, the toys get put in, you know, whatever, and they're go I still have almost all the toys that I had when I was a kid. Like, unless my parents physically got rid of them and didn't tell me, and then I got very mad at my parents. You know how, like, Andy is mad at his mom when he can't find the bag that he thought he put in the attic? That does not even begin to cover it when my parents got rid of toys without asking me.
And there are people of our generation whose parents did throw those toys away. They're going on eBay to buy back their toys.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely. But I mean, I still have like, you know, my dolls from when I was, you know, 8 or 9 and things like that. Some of them are in storage, some of them are a lot of them are like displayed, you know. And honestly, that's more realistic for someone who, you know, Andy would just be like a few years younger than us if he was a real kid. And if you think about like most of the people we know, almost everyone we know has a toy collection. You know, that we have action figures, we have plushies, we have Funko Pops, we have whatever. And a lot of us still have stuff from when we were kids that we have preserved and taken good care of. Millennials take shockingly good care of their toys and have since we were kids. If a toy is at all still in like working condition, like unless it's absolutely just completely crumbled, we have probably saved it and have displayed it proudly. And half of us probably still have played with a toy in our adulthood, like within the last few days. You know?
Like there's that scene right after where Andy's sister is throwing her toys into a box to get donated, and she sees her Barbie doll and she just throws it away like it's nothing. Granted, she's a different generation, but the reaction the other toys have to just her just tossing Barbie into the box like she's nothing.
And poor Barbie is just beside herself.
How could she throw me away?
I think if this movie had been written by a millennial, this is an entirely different movie.
I think it's still Andy trying to take Woody to college. Andy would have just taken Woody to college.
Yeah. And also, he wouldn't have, like, why is he cleaning out his room? Who's moving into his room? His sister has his own room. There's not like a baby. Is his mom renting out his room because she needs like spare cash?
Apparently, the sister wants the room. I don't know. That's never explained. Maybe she wants her own rec room or something. I don't know. This is going to be my exercise room now or something.
I am to understand that good parents tend to keep their like kids' rooms intact with for when they come home from college. Like, yeah, Andy's going to like live in a dorm or whatever probably, but like
Not
that's just
forever.
for the semester. Like, what's he gonna come home to?
He's coming home at Christmas and stuff like that.
Yeah. So like what's he gonna do? Sleep on the couch between semesters?
Yeah.
The one thing that does ring true to me, though, is that he puts the stuff for the attic in a garbage bag, and then his mom sees it and is like, garbage.
Yeah. But like you said, later in the movie, we see Andy looking for the toys. And then he gets so, you see the anger. I mean, you never see his face, but it's clearly his body language is, what the hell did you do, Mom? And the look of shock on her face, like, oh, what did I do?
You kind of do feel bad for the mom because it's like, well, it was in a garbage bag and it wasn't marked. But also, maybe ask first.
Yeah. Andy, is this yours? What do you want to do with it? But eventually they break out of the garbage bag and they decide, well, Andy doesn't want us anymore. They think Andy was throwing them out. They think that's what they think, because they were put in a garbage bag and they were
And
put
they
on the
didn't
curb.
know they were going to the attic because they
Yeah.
were in the garbage bag.
They think Andy was going to throw them out. So they said, you know what? If he doesn't want us, we're going to find kids that do. And they go into the donation box for the daycare. And of course, Woody
And
says it.
poor Barbie. Oh my
Yeah.
goodness. Like, Barbie is just in that box. She's like, she threw me out. She's like having a full-on panic attack. Like, oh my goodness, you just
Jesse
want to
would
hug her.
know. Jesse would know what she's going through.
Yeah. Jesse is like, oh, you poor thing. Yeah. Well, Jesse's having like flashbacks
Panic
too.
attacks. Jenny is have Jesse is having full on panic attacks. Cause like,
Yeah,
no,
could.
not again, not again, not again. Like, she's hyperventilating, she's holding her chest, she's going through this thing all over again that she went through before. And she's just like, she's done. She's had it. I'm gonna, if this kid doesn't want me, I'll go to another kid that wants me. And this is where we meet Bonnie. And there are people who hate Bonnie. But that's story for a different day. The idea of introducing a brand new kid, especially with Andy growing up, is a given. Because obviously, the way they wrote, I mean, why not give it to her, his sister? But it's very clear that they wrote Andy's sister to not really be interested in Andy's toys
Well, and
whatsoever.
also she's 13.
Yeah.
So she's aging out as well.
Yeah. So to introduce a new kid that would be of similar age to Andy in the first film, Andy is six in the first film, and Bonnie is what, three, four? Because she's not going to kindergarten or anything yet. She's just going to daycare. And her mom runs, seemingly runs the daycare.
Yeah, I don't I couldn't really figure out like what Bonnie's deal was.
I
It's
mean,
just suddenly like, oh hey, a kid we're supposed to care about.
They write Bonnie pretty well. I mean, she acts
No, I
like.
mean the kid is fine, but the way they introduce the kid, like it's okay that the mom is like Andy's mom is like, oh, you know, the daycare is always looking for toys, which is fine, 'cause you know, if you live in like a town or whatever, you'll see like advertisements or whatever, like daycare needs toy donations or whatever. So it's fine that the mom knows about that, but then she walks in and she's like, oh my God, is this Bonnie? She's grown up so much. And it's like suddenly like we're supposed to know who this kid is and care about this kid. Just because the mom seems to know the kid, but we don't know the kid. You know? Like, they
Very.
don't really introduce us to the kid in a natural way.
But they also put up that Andy's mom and Bonnie's mom know each other in some capacity. Because she asked Andy's mom, oh, how's Andy doing? Oh, yeah, he's about to go to college. He's gotten so big, and oh, hey, now you have a little one of your own kind of deal.
Yeah, and I mean, That's fine and everything, but we as the audience don't really know anything. And we get to know her, and she's cool. I like the character. Bonnie as a character is cute and everything, but the way we're introduced to her is just like the movie is like, you're gonna care about this kid.
This is the new Andy. Love her.
Yeah, which I eventually do as we spend time with her, but we're not introduced to her in a organic way. And that I think was where the movie flubbed it a little bit with her. If maybe they had gotten into the daycare and she was like the one nice kid in the middle of all the crazy toddlers or something, that would have been a good introduction.
I mean, having her be the daughter of one of the employees makes sense why she's taking some of these toys home. Because a random kid is just grabbing toys from the daycare and taking them home without a connection to the daycare does seem kind of sus.
Yeah, well, also she didn't take the toy from inside the daycare. She
She
took
didn't
Woody
take.
home 'cause she found him on the road.
But we do, the other toys say that they were all found by Bonnie. They were all, quote, rescued by Bonnie.
Well, maybe they also tried to escape and she just keeps finding toys by the side of the road.
Maybe.
But the thing is like if they'd introduced her as like the one nice kid in the middle of the crazy toddlers or whatever, maybe she's the one kid that comes in after the toddlers 'cause her mom's there late or whatever, and like she cleans them up or something. You know? Or she's nice and puts them away or, you know, picks up their accessories and puts them all back or something. You know, if she was that kid and they were like, oh, we like her because she's the nice one. And she's just there after hours because her mom works there. Then that's like an organic way to introduce her. And then you as an audience are like, oh, I kind of dig this kid. She's imaginative and she's nice to the toys. So, and then you can understand how maybe like she ends up with the toys because like they get broken or whatever, and she takes them home and fixes them like she did with the creepy clown that should be thrown in the garbage. I do not like that. I do not, no, get rid of that. Put it in the incinerator.
But we get to the daycare, and then we see Lotso and Lotso's entire backstory is, we've kind of seen a similar story before with Jesse, with the prospector, but this one gets turned up to 11. Because Lotso, Big Baby, and the clown all belong to one girl. She loses them on a vacation. And yeah, if a kid loses their favorite toy, parents are quick to replace it because they don't want their kid having a crisis because they lost their favorite toy. So there's no bad guy in that scenario. But Lotso doesn't really understand that. Lotso, in Lotso's mind, they replaced us. And I like how he pushed it there. They replaced us when all it was just they replaced Lotso. Like, we don't see another Big Baby doll. We don't see another clown doll. We just see another Lotso doll. And Lotso's villain origin story of finding the daycare, becoming sort of this godfather-like figure and running the daycare like a prison, putting all of the new toys with the toddlers while all of the older toys get to stay with the big kids.
Here's one of the things that again, me thinking too much about stuff. So in this universe, the toys are sentient and they can move around and all that kind of stuff. They have their own personalities. But they have this code or whatever that whenever a human is around, they pretend to be completely inanimate and whatever. But they live their entire lives in fear of their kid growing up and abandoning them. And the solution to this is let the humans know that you are sentient creatures. Can you imagine if, like, your toy was like, "Hey, what's up? I'm a sentient creature. You want to play?" If I had had toys as a kid that could, like, interact with me? Like, remember when Furbies came out and all they did was go, like, "Meow, meow," and we were like, "This is the coolest thing ever. My toy talks back to me." Imagine if that, but freaking sentient. And it's every toy.
I don't know how that would have changed society.
Abandon
That's
the
that might have
toy.
changed things.
Nobody would abandon a toy ever again. You would pass your toys down for like 17 generations.
I don't know. I mean, it's that's something I guess we're not supposed to think about because the toys have their function.
Just put a little extra thought into these things, you know? It's like, what if toys had feelings? Well, like, okay, but carry that to its logical conclusion, my dude.
Then we have like toy rights, and I think that's going way far than this movie is willing to go.
Well, I know it's farther than the movie is willing to go. But, you know, you brought up the questions, Pixar. Don't get mad at me for, you know, following your storyline.
I don't know, but then you gotta apply that to every other Pixar movie.
Oh, I do.
Why don't the fish
You've met
talk?
me,
Why
right?
don't Yes, I met you. I've known you for over a decade at this point.
There's
But
a
it's
reason we haven't talked about cars yet.
But okay, why don't the fish talk to the humans? Why don't the bugs talk to the humans? Why
We
don't the
don't know. We do not actually know if the fish and the bugs are able to communicate with humans. All we know is that they are able to communicate with each other. But we do know that the toys are able to communicate with humans. At least via writing.
And then you have that thing with Woody is that he wants to go back to Andy, ends up with Bonnie, and for the first time in however many years, he's being played with. And he likes the idea of playing again. Even though he feels that he's Andy's toy, if Andy doesn't need him anymore, and this Bonnie kid is playing with him,
Can we talk about the point where Woody first ends up with Bonnie and her toys and she's doing the tea party and Woody is like, "Hey, you know, where am I? I need to get out of here," and everything. And they're like, "Hey, you know what? We do a lot of improv around here. Just go with the flow, you'll be fine." I did love that.
I love Bonnie's little imagination. Like, she's far more into the imagination than Andy was.
I love the way that Bonnie plays. She is so cool. What an awesome kid.
Little bundle of chaos, and I love her in this movie.
Yeah, she's great. I, you know, 10 out of 10 would play with that kid.
Like, oh no, who would poison me? Oh no, it's an evil witch! Ah, we gotta get in the spaceship to escape the evil witch!
Yeah, I love that she keeps pulling the string on Woody, and whatever the voice box on Woody says, she just goes with it. You know?
I mean, and I get it. It's this counterpoint of Woody playing with a kid that knows how to play with him and having a good time, versus the other toys being played with kids who are way too young to be playing with those kind of toys and almost breaking them on a daily basis.
Yeah. And you feel so bad for the toys.
Though, whatever crayons and paint and glitter and glue that they're using at this daycare must all be water-based, since at the end of the movie they're all just hosed down and they're fine.
Yeah. I was like, boy, that came off easily.
Yeah. I
Especially
want.
that glitter. I want to know what kind of glitter comes off that easily, because I need that glitter.
Yeah. We talked about this one before we started recording, and yeah, we're skipping to it, but I want to talk about what exactly is the sentience level of a potato head?
Yeah, where is the brain in a potato head?
Because there's that point where they do their breakout. Woody comes back, they do the big breakout, and part of the breakout is Mr. Potato Head disassembling himself, reassembled onto a tortilla. And the tortilla walks and talks just like Mr. Potato Head does, and the potato body is seemingly lifeless. He also does the same thing by attaching his parts to a cucumber.
He's Pickle Potato Head.
Mr. Picklehead. So it's like, what is the sentience level of a potato head? Where does the brain come in? Are the individual parts individually sentient, since we see one of the arms slap the other to kind of get their attention?
Well, here's the weird thing. Okay, so the original Mr. Potato Head was literally just the parts,
And you
and
put
you
it on
put
it.
it on an actual potato.
Yeah.
So it is possible that the sentience of a potato head is in the parts. Because the plastic body is the thing that came last in a potato head.
I mean, and good on them, because kids playing around with a potentially rotting potato that's had holes drilled into it from these parts. Yeah.
Also, you're wasting food.
Yeah. In theory, if Andy were to lose the potato body of the Potato Head toy and still had the parts, could those parts attach to something else and be sentient? Sentient.
Yes. I would say yes.
All right. That's sure. We'll go with that. That's what this movie tells us, and that's how we have to go with it.
Well, I mean, and you know, Mrs. Potato Head loses one of her eyes, and it is still capable of function no matter how far away she is from it.
Yeah, she sees Andy, and the eye is still in Andy's room, and she can look out of that eye and see Andy's looking for us.
Yeah, Woody was telling the truth. Also, when does Woody lie? Like, we're three movies in, and has Woody ever told a lie?
That's on Potato Head. Potato Head always is the one that doesn't believe Woody.
Yeah, Mr. Potato Head is kind of a douche. The thing about it is, though, is that at when Mr. Potato Head is Mr. Tortilla, there is that moment where he comes across a pigeon.
Yeah.
And I just have to say, Frank Welker, he is your
Oh,
childhood.
Frank Welker does the voice of the pigeon.
Yeah, he does the voice of the pigeon. He does Bullseye again, and he does the dog. What's the dog's name?
Buster.
Buster, yeah, he does Buster Andy's dog, who is getting up there in years. And
Yeah,
I
there's a
gotta
lot.
say, I love the way they animate Buster the dog.
Oh, with the gray fur, and he's kind of a lazy dog now. He's not as spry as he was in the second movie.
Yeah, he's a chonker now. It is so cute.
Yeah.
Yeah, love
But
it.
Woody trying to ride Buzz like he did in the second movie, and he's like, nah, I'm not doing this.
Yeah, Buster's like, no, I'm gonna lay down, take a nap.
In the nice sunlight in this room.
Yeah.
Dogs seem to like to do that. I mean, as a dog owner yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, but I love it. Oh, and also he's the monkey.
Ah.
The little symbol monkey. As I told you off mic, there is a reason that you shoot all those symbol monkeys in Fallout. They are creepy and they are usually attached to bombs.
Let's talk about what happens to Buzz in this movie. Because Buzz, for all of this, he goes to lots of saying, "Hey, we want out of the toddler area because we're not supposed to be there. Those kids don't know how to play with us. Can you put us in another room?" And he says, "Yes, I can do that, but it's for one of you only." And then they take Buzz, and apparently, you mentioned the bookworm. They have the instruction manuals of seemingly every toy to ever exist. And they reset Buzz to factory settings, and we're back to the Buzz from the beginning of the first movie.
I love that there's just a little switch in there, and it reminded me of Simpsons, Oh, you got it set to evil.
Yeah.
Like,
Somebody switched his Buzz Lightyear to evil. But yeah, they put him back factory settings, putting in the store demo mode, and it's just sort of bad guy Buzz, but it's just the Buzz from the beginning of the first movie where he thinks he's a real space ranger. And he's been convinced that the other toys are Disciples of Zurg. I'm not sure what episode of the Buzz Lightyear TV show where Buzz had to work with a giant pink teddy bear, but we're just going to roll with it. And then once they get Buzz down and they're trying to reset him, they accidentally switch him to Spanish mode.
can we
The
point out that Spanish Buzz Lightyear is awesome?
idea of a toy with different voices for different languages, nothing new. Lots of toys do that for different countries. The idea of it's all in one toy and you can set the language by pressing a button, it works for this movie. It works for this movie, and we get, Spanish Buzz. One of the plot lines from the second movie and even into this third movie is Buzz clearly having feelings for Jessie. Jessie is very, very open with her feelings towards Buzz, and Buzz is not very open, doesn't really know how to express his feelings for Jessie until he turns into Spanish mode, and then he goes full Latin lover. "You are the most beautiful woman I've ever seen in my life. I've never known beauty until I've seen your face." Granted, he's saying this in Spanish.
And it totally works on Jesse.
Yeah.
And I think it's probably because it's no longer Tim Allen, which is a massive plus.
Not quite Chris Evans.
Yeah, not quite Chris Evans. I don't know. I don't know who Javier Fernandez Pena is, who does Spanish Buzz. But he does a good job here. Anything not Tim Allen is a step up.
Yeah.
The thing about it is, though, is that I love that that the second that they switch him to Spanish mode, he immediately becomes a cross between a flamenco dancer and a matador.
Yeah.
The interesting thing is that there is a dance number in here, which was choreographed by two of the dancers from Dancing with the Stars, which is also owned by Disney.
Now on Disney
So,
Plus.
huh?
Now on Disney Plus.
Yeah, now on Disney Plus. Cheryl Burke and Tony Davolani choreographed it, and I guess they probably like motion captured them or something, but they also performed it on Dancing with the Stars, probably on one of their Disney nights, because they always have a Disney night on Dancing with the Stars, while the Gypsy Kings, who performed the Spanish version of You Got a Friend in Me, performed their version. And I remember when they did that. But the thing is I like the Spanish version of You Got a Friend in Me better because it's not performed by Randy Newman.
They salsify it, and I like it.
It's a really cool sequence with Buzz, in Spanish mode and Jesse dancing together.
And she digs the Spanish mode at the end of the movie. It's like, I know Buzz's Spanish mode. I'm gonna have a good time with that.
Yeah, and they learn at the end of the movie that if you play Latin rhythm music, Buzz kind of goes into that rhythm and starts dancing. So Jessie uses it to her advantage.
Hey, whatever works for her.
Yeah.
Let's get to the third act in this whole thing with it, which is the dump. They plan, part of this escape is they're going to escape out the trash chute and get back to Andy, but they all end up in the garbage truck going to the dump.
And
I
this
remember.
is harrowing. I can't imagine watching this as a child.
Take the same scene. Take the same scene from the Brave Little Toaster. Go back to our Brave Little Toaster episode all of those years ago and multiply it by a million. This is the final form of that scene. And yeah, seeing the Brave Little Toaster as a little kid and that trash dump scene versus this scene, and I'm a grown ass man in a movie theater watching this, and it hits me so much more.
Well, I mean, I'm watching this as a first watch for this podcast. I already know that there's like Toy Story 4 and Planned 5. And I'm still like, they're killing these toys. Like, there's that moment where they're all, where Lotso betrays them and, leaves them to die. And there's that moment where they're all just like, well, we're dead. We might as well hold hands and face oblivion. And I'm like crying because I'm like, well, it's been a good run, guys. Congratulations. And the thing is that if you're an adult, you know how this is going to work out because they foreshadowed it so heavily. They get to the dump and they're separated from the little alien guys, and the little alien guys are like, Dikla! And they're like, if you've got a brain cell in your head, you know where this is going. And so, like, as a logical adult, I know that this is going to end with Dikla! I see this coming like 20 minutes before it happens. But also, it's such an effective scene, the way they've set it up emotionally, the emotional part of me is like, well, guys, we've had a good run. We're about to melt into plastic goo.
It's the music. It's the animation. It's all of these characters accepting their fate. And it's like, bring your tissues. This is the first bring your tissues to Pixar movie moment for me. Because like I said, I'm in the theater watching this when it first came out. And I'm like, oh. They're not going to kill these characters off this way. This is not how this movie's going to end. No way.
I think if I'd have seen it in the theater, I would have expected that they would have killed at least one character.
And considering we've been with these characters for three movies, any of them dying would have been a gut punch.
Like, I would have expected them to, like, kill Slinky or something.
Oh, no, not right after Jim Varney passed.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, because Jim Varney had passed, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, him sacrificing himself for, you know, to save the others or something. Mm-hmm. You know, let him go out as a hero or whatever. Mm-hmm. But, like, I think that's what I would have expected had I been watching it in the theater.
One of my favorite things that came out of this was a prank. So apparently there was this family, these kids, and their mom wanted to see Toy Story 3. She didn't get a chance to see it in the theater. And they say, oh, we bought it on Blu-ray. We're going to show you. But they had edited the movie to have a fade out in when they're about to go in the incinerator, and it cuts straight to the credits.
Oh, that's evil.
Like, no! That can't be how the movie ends! Yeah, Mom, that's how the movie ends. It's like, could you imagine if someone had pulled that prank on you?
I mean, I probably would not have been friends with them anymore.
But these are your children doing this to you.
I mean, I probably would not have let them live in my house anymore.
But it's an evil prank, but it's a good one, but it's evil. But yeah, we get the culmination of the Pizza Planet aliens claw thing, because now they are the claw.
The claw.
The claws are master. And they finally make, you know, they hitch a ride on the garbage truck to get back to Andy's, because, hey, Andy's leaving today. This is our last chance. And another garbage man picks up Lotso. And I see it a lot here in the city, the garbage truck with the stuffed animal tied to the front.
Is that really a thing?
Yeah.
Huh.
In the city.
I've never seen that before.
I've seen a lot of them here in the city. Not just garbage trucks, but just trucks in general with that grill in the front. I've seen quite a number of stuffed animals just tied to it.
Well, that was the thing that I was like, so Lotso just becomes like a Mad Max gimp on the front of a garbage truck.
He's now this mascot, and they're telling him, hey, keep your mouth shut. Well, because there's all these flies hitting them. Like, all of the other dolls on that grill have dead flies stuck to them. Yeah, so they eventually make it back to Andy's. It's another tearjerker, because I remember watching this scene in the theaters, and I'm watching this with tears in my eyes as Andy says goodbye to his toys. Andy meets Bonnie, and he says, hey, I'm going to go away for a little while, and I need someone to take care of my toys. Again, whoever wrote this part really understands how an adult talks to a child.
Yeah, and it was a really good scene of him trying to, you know, be like, okay, you know, here's the toys, here are their personalities. You know, let's sit down and play with them, and, you know. And then he works his toys into her play, because he heard what she was doing with her toys. Mm-hmm. And then he's like, Oh no, my evil toy is attacking your bakery thing that you were doing.
Oh no, the ghosts are gonna get out.
Yeah, and then she's like, oh, you're playing along with me with what I was doing. You understand what I'm doing.
And he hasn't forgotten what it's like to be a kid. And again, it's probably the first time in years he's played with these toys. I got a lot. I kind. I mean, we mentioned the coolness of Bonnie, but I do like. I kind of like Bonnie's fit of like overalls, tutu, and galoshes.
Yeah. Like total swag.
This is a kid that has learned to dress herself and will wear whatever she wants, and you can't tell her otherwise.
Yeah. Love it.
Seeing grown-up Andy holding Buzz at first, she reaches out to him, my cowboy, and Andy just instinctively holds him back. Like, is he ready to let go of Woody, his favorite toy in the world? Yes, he is propping up the other toys. Yes, he just called Buzz Lightyear the greatest toy that ever existed. But Woody's is his. That's his favorite toy. And then to, this is Woody. He'll be your best friend. He will always be there when you need him. And you can tell the love that he has for Woody as he describes all of the amazing things that Woody can do, that he's done with Woody.
Yeah, he's the bravest. He's,
Yeah.
the most loyal.
And him, that moment where he hands Woody to Bonnie and they play all play together, and it's like for the last time, Andy being the horse giving Woody a ride, just like he did in the first two movies. And I was crying at the scene in the theater because you know what's happening. This is Andy saying goodbye to his toys. He's ne likely never going to see these characters again. He's growing up. He's going to go to college, and this is his. And at least he knows, at least at this point in time, that his toys are going to be taken care of. Because here's this kid who's just, who understands how to play with these toys. And Andy's final words as he looks at his toys, thanks, guys. Like, there's that little bit of kid Andy there, that they're alive to him, even though he doesn't know that these characters are alive.
This is where the series should have ended.
Yeah, everyone says
Because,
that. Everyone says that.
I mean, I haven't seen Toy Story 4 yet, so I don't know what they did with it. And now they're going to do a 5, but okay, they post-credit sequence, notwithstanding, Bonnie is sitting there playing with the toys, and the toys are all happy and stuff. And Andy goes off to college, and then it pans up, and there's the clouds that look just like the clouds that were on Andy's room when he was a kid. Okay, that's a good final shot. All right, movie wrapped up, story wrapped up. Boomers or Gen Xers or whoever the hell was writing this movie think that you've got to give up all your toys and become an adult. All right, fine, whatever. And then, you've got the cute little after credit sequence of like, oh, the daycare is fine now. Barbie and Ken are running it and everybody's happy and wonderful. The thing is, though, is that like, if there's whenever they do Toy Story 5 or whatever, I want it to be Andy, like being an actual millennial and finding his toys for sale on eBay and getting them back and being like, Oh, thank goodness I've got my toys back now.
Yeah.
Like finding literally those toys, like a thing on, like, here's a bunch of toys that were, donated to me or whatever, and they all have Andy written on the feet of them. And Andy's like, oh my God, it's my toys. Buy now, And then he's like, maybe got like a kid now or whatever, but he's like playing with his kid with those toys and like displaying them and taking good care of them and apologizing for ever getting rid of them.
Yeah. That's kind of how I wanted Lightyear to end. Because I wanted Lightyear to have that post-credit scene where an adult Andy is leaving the theater with his kid having seen the movie. And then his kid gushing about how cool Buzz Lightyear is. And then he buys his kid a Buzz Lightyear doll. That didn't happen, but, that's what I wanted to happen in that movie.
Yeah.
And there's changing letters, and it's kind of a cringe moment because, oh man, what a great letter Barbie sent us. Oh no, it's written because it's written in pink marker. It's on very, colorful paper with stickers on it. Oh, it's signed by Ken.
Yeah, I did not like that joke either.
But yeah, that's the only part of this thing that kind of like, ugh. This joke, it's not aged well. Probably shouldn't have been in the original movie either. One thing I do like is Trixie being very into the internet.
And games.
Because we saw Rex was a gamer in the last movie.
Yeah, and they're playing games at the end of the movie together.
Yeah, he's got a gaming buddy. That's good.
I love them trying to high five.
Yeah.
It's very cute.
And we haven't talked about it yet, but the Miyazaki reference in this movie.
Yeah.
Bonnie has a Totoro plushie.
Because the art director is married to Miyazaki's niece.
Oh.
Yeah, that's why that's in there.
But all in all, it's a very cute movie. It is a nice ending to this saga, and it should have been the ending to this saga. Most people will agree it should have ended here. This was a nice ending to a trilogy. Andy's story is over. The toys are safe. The toys are now under a new kid that can play with them differently, but they'll still be, loved and appreciated, at least until Toy Story 4. And again, I don't hate Toy Story 4, but I can see why people do. Again, we'll get to it eventually. But yeah, it should have ended here. There should not have been a Toy Story 4. There should not have been a Toy Story 5. I do like, however, what they should have done is it the Toy Story shorts that came after this are amazing. And it should have just been that. Have a half hour special every couple of years just to be an adventure with the toys and Bonnie. I'm okay with that. Have a 5, 10 to 15 minute short before another Pixar movie where it's just a short feature in the toys. Again, I'm fine with that. Another movie, probably not. But we did. We got Toy Story 4. We're getting Toy Story 5. But this movie by itself is a perfect bookend to the Toy Story saga, and it should have been. Does Toy Story 3 have the magic? Absolutely. It is
Yeah, I would agree.
perfect ending, perfect wrap up to Andy. Do I part of me does wish we had gotten the recalled storyline, but this is a much better story. This is a much better bookend to that era. Having Andy grow up, having Andy move on, and have the toys go to another kid. I get it. And it's a perfect ending. Yeah, it should have been the ending. But yeah, this movie is perfect. This movie is amazing. Does have the magic. Yes. Thumbs up.
Yeah, I'll agree.
As for next week, well, we like talking about Tom Hanks movies, so we're going to talk about another one. Let's go back to the 80s. Let's talk Big. Another story about a kid growing up, but not naturally.
Yeah, this is going to be an interesting one.
Yeah, there's... If you've seen the movie Big, you're kind of already tugging at your collar going, oh, we got to talk. Oh, they're going to talk about that. And yes, we are. If you don't, come back next week and you'll find out all about that. So come back next week for Big, and we will talk to you all next time. Bye.
Bye.
Don't let the magic stop here. Join our conversations on Facebook, Instagram, and Threads at Rewatching the Magic. We are on the X, formerly known as Twitter, at Rewatch the Magic. And new episodes are available every week at rewatchingthemagic.podbean.com. Remember, the magic is for everyone. It only stops if you let it.
Podcasts are fun.
But there's work to be done.
We encourage you to get involved. Here are some organizations we support.
The American Civil Liberties Union fights for the constitutional rights of all Americans. Find them at ACLU.org.
The National Network of Abortion Funds helps people find access to safe abortion services. Their site is abortionfunds.org.
The Trevor Project provides a 24/7 crisis helpline for LGBTQ youth and education services for schools on LGBTQ issues. They can be found at thetrevorproject.org.
Or find a way to help in your area.